there's no longer a presumption of regularity. When someone from DOJ used to go to court and say, on behalf of the United States, there was a presumption that they were telling the truth and that there was some legitimacy to their arguments. That is not the case now. Welcome to the final episode of Just the Facts for 2025, where I am joined by my former iGen Politics host, Victor Shi, who is now a mature adult. Well, okay, maybe not so, but he's definitely now a full-time employed person. And I want to talk to Victor about what happened in 2025, what his generation expects from 2026, what my generation has experienced this year and is looking forward to. And before we started recording, someone said, you got to fight City Hall, because of course, Victor has been for the last year been working for City Hall in Los Angeles. He works for Mayor Karen Bass. And I said, I bet, Victor, you don't even know what that phrase means. And what did you say, Victor?
I said, I don't know what that phrase means. And I still don't know what that phrase means.
Well, it used to be a thing where that was what we would say when we said, you got to fight back. You got to fight City Hall, because city halls were really crucial and still are. People don't realize the federal government has a lot of impact on our lives, but local ordinances, city ordinances, really impact us every single day in every single way. So that was a big thing about what you had to do to resist. And of course, you and I are both part of the resistance. The Sisters-in-Law has a lot of merch that is resist for Sisters-in-Law, resistance, sweatshirts and t-shirts. And anyway, that's what it means. But maybe we could start with some language that your generation, Gen X, uses that I just was reading about and learning about, things like DeLulu. You know what that is? I had to look up what it meant.
Yes. I mean, I remember those were some of the funnest episodes back when we were co-hosting iGen Politics, were those quizzes that tested the different generations' work styles or languages or ways of communicating. And yes, DeLulu is one of them. I'm trying to think of other words in 2025 that sort of define my generation. There's one, I don't know if this is, this might be last year, but a lot of people use the word Riz to describe people who are charismatic.
Right.
And so there's all of these. And it was funny because over Thanksgiving, I was in LA for Thanksgiving and I went to a friend's house who had, and her family was there. And we were talking about the ways that Gen Z communicates. And it's like, it would be like indecipherable if you were like a couple generations older, because they'll say things like, they'll combine words like, you know, it sounds so silly to say, but when they say like, I'm going to, like, if you were to say, I'm going to do this, a Gen Zer might say, I finna do this, which I have no idea why that's the case, but they'll combine different words and it makes no sense. But that's, there's a lot of Gen Z slang these days.
It is. And there was a piece online that I saw that had things like DeLulu and Riz. That was, so I actually know what Riz is, but it is true. I mean, even just learning to talk in text talk, I still write texts like I'm writing a letter, because I used to handwrite letters. And Michael and I, my husband, reconnected after a long term, you know, going to different colleges and going on to graduate school in different places through an actual snail mail letter. And which I still have. So it's just really a funny thing about how we communicate. And you, of course, have been involved in communications for Mayor Bass and now for other organizations as well as a freelancer. And your main job is to communicate with your generation. So how do you reach out to them? Obviously, you're using different sources of media than my generation would have used, which would have been the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune. You're using, I assume, social media. What else are you doing?
Yeah, my portfolio isn't youth specific, but it is trying to reach newer audiences. And the ways that you reach newer audiences, I think, align with the ways that you would reach a young person. So you mentioned social media. That's a big component of it. Really making sure that every interview that happens or every op-ed that's written is also posted on social media.
Right.
Podcasts are a huge way. I've been learning a lot about YouTube and sort of the uniqueness of that platform. I learned that it's apparently not a social media. It's a streaming platform. Apparently, like more than 80% of people actually watch YouTube on their television screen. So it's not even on their phones. It's on TV. Right. And so it's sort of replacing former linear TV. And it's just fascinating the more I learn about it. But it's sort of taking all of sort of the ways that the media ecosystem is evolving and trying to find new ways to reach new audiences, go on different mediums, go on different shows. And I don't know how successful it's been, but it's at least when we talk about sort of City Hall, it's not something that often happens at the local level. But I'm very grateful that the mayor and her office is nimble in their approaches and has allowed me to really experiment with getting her on podcasts and try out different formats. And it's sort of been a we've been building the plane as it's flying. And hopefully it's working to some degree.
Yeah. So, you know, when you mentioned YouTube, my husband, who is really a troglodyte in terms of anything technical, actually introduced me to television YouTube. He is, every single night, he goes on and he'll say music, comedy, and he finds fabulous, fabulous things. He's found a lot of, he found a jazz artist, Andrea Motti, who's a Brazilian saxophonist and singer, who's fabulous. He has listened to, oh gosh, maybe 100 different versions of Hallelujah by different singers. He loves the YouTube stuff. And then you find documentaries and you find films. It really is a unique and interesting thing, which is why I do this YouTube show. So yes. Here you are. And you're the one who got me started. When you first said in 2017, oh my God, it's so long ago now, let's do a podcast, I had to say, what's a podcast? I had never, ever listened to a podcast before. And it is a great way of communicating. But in an episode this week that I did with Susan Berger, a freelance journalist, we talked about the dangers of not just podcasts, but of social media giving a platform to unedited, unfact-checked voices. Whereas in the past, we had traditional media that had fact-checkers, and you could rely on them. Nowadays, you cannot rely on what you hear on TikTok, on YouTube, on any other platform, because it's just someone voicing their opinion and putting it out as if it's fact. You can't even believe Donald Trump. Well, actually, we've known that for a long time. But I mean, this business about that Ukraine was attacking his home, Donald Trump believed it because he heard it from Putin, who is maybe as big a liar as Donald Trump. And I'm sure that all of his MAGA forces believe what he said. And isn't that terrible? As opposed to believing that, in fact, we can see the bombings in Kiev of civilian targets. So it's good that there's more First Amendment, but it's bad that so much of it is unchecked and believed. But absolutely. Let's talk about, you know, like, what was important to your generation this year? What are the, you know, three things that you would put at the top? Maybe five.
Oh, my. I think so much of my life was consumed by the events that happened in Los Angeles. And I flew into L.A. the second day of the fires. And so I flew into a huge cloud of smoke, and it was very apocalyptic. So that was like the first couple of months of my sort of 2025. And I feel like that was a huge thing that impacted LA. And then, you know, we talked so much about
Victor, that also affected the world, because it is a sign of climate change.
Absolutely.
And we now have climate deniers running the government, and they're not recognizing that catastrophe, which forced you to start your job earlier than you had planned, because you got a call saying, we need help, and we have to respond to the press about what's going on. And so you flew to California earlier than you had planned and started work. But that is a national event, not just L.A. And immigration was your second big issue there.
Immigration, and that's something that has affected so many Democratic cities after LA. But that was a random day in June. I remember that morning we went to this big unveiling of a metro center at LAX, which, if anyone has ever been to LAX, they know that it's a very tricky and bad airport to travel in. So that was a big deal. And then all of a sudden, the mayor gets a call saying that there are random snatchings of immigrants off the streets. And so she had that was when LA turned upside down. And that's when this horrible series of ICE raids and National Guard deployment started and really sort of took over the city for the next couple of months. And of course, Chicago as well. Yes. And then I would say the last thing that really has impacted LA and sort of has scared the industry a lot is the talk about the mergers and what's going to happen with all of these big media companies. There's a lot of, you know, people think that Netflix might be better than Paramount, but either deal will be catastrophic for the industry and what it means for writers and producers and people who are trying to make a living and the future of going to movie theaters. It's just very precarious right now, the situation in the industry. And I just feel like everything just seems so overwhelming. And 2025 has been quite the year for all of us. What about you? What are your three or
I agree on the three that you have mentioned. And I've witnessed the immigration raids right here in my hometown in Evanston and in Chicago, which is the adjacent area, so that I basically live in Chicago, Evanston, and spend my time in those two places. And seeing the fear of people not wanting to leave their houses, seeing my neighbors' landscapers picked up while they're working, it's horrifying. Seeing American citizens dragged from their cars. So that's pretty horrible. We need a solution, and this is not the solution. This is not to say that we don't need to protect the country. It's saying that we need to follow the rule of law, which maybe brings me to maybe some of the most important to me, which is what's happened to the Department of Justice and the rule of law in America and the courts and the executive branch, DOJ. It's terrifying to me that there's no longer a presumption of regularity. When someone from DOJ used to go to court and say, on behalf of the United States, there was a presumption that they were telling the truth and that there was some legitimacy to their arguments. That is not the case now. Judges know that they cannot be trusted, that they lie, that they are making far out arguments. Unfortunately, district courts are seeing it firsthand and ruling against them. And then it's getting to appellate courts and then the Supreme Court. And that's not always true. Now, the Supreme Court did just say in a good ruling for Chicago that the Guard could not, National Guard, could not be deployed in Chicago. But that's a temporary thing. It wasn't on the merits. And there's not a firm opinion that I could say about what will happen when it goes back to the Supreme Court on the merits, not on whether or not they could do this right now, pending it getting to the merits. So I'm not all that comfortable with what the Supreme Court is doing, and I could go for a full hour on all the bad decisions we've had this year from the Supreme Court. And, you know, it started with the appointment of Pam Bondi, who was and remains Donald Trump's personal lawyer. That's not what the Attorney General is supposed to be. The Attorney General represents you and me and all Americans, but not the way she's behaving. And Kash Patel and his girlfriend, who is getting FBI protection and is getting plane rides for free, it's appalling to me. So we've had a lot of bad stuff. Todd Blanche, I guess I have to mention him too. Bongino, who's leaving, so maybe he saw the light. That's a problem. And the Department of Defense, of course, is a problem with what they're doing and the violations of women's rights in the military, the violation of human rights in the drone attacks and killing of survivors of shipwrecks after they've attacked the boats without any evidence that there were drugs, particularly fentanyl, which is supposed to be the reason they're doing it. And there was just a little article that didn't get much attention that I saw today that one of the boats blown up has now washed ashore in Colombia with some bodies as well as the boat and bags of, guess what? Marijuana. No fentanyl, not even cocaine. Bags of marijuana were recovered. So, and of course, fishermen are now afraid that the waters are being polluted. I just want to say I did speak to a water expert from the Chicago Reclamation Board who said, you know, dilution is the best solution to pollution. So when you put a few bags of even cocaine in the ocean, the dilution will protect us from all of us getting sick from cocaine because it's in our water supply. And plus there is, of course, filtration before we drink it. But the fish are eating it. And so you now have to worry about fish. And I'm against farmed fish, but maybe farm fish may for some temporary part be safer to eat. So I would say those are some of my worst things of 2025. I guess some of the Supreme Court decisions would have to rank in that area as to things they've done. And thank heavens for the three liberal justices who have written very powerful dissents that will go down in the history books as really important. And I can only hope that in 28, we have a new Supreme Court and that the new Supreme Court undoes some of the damaging decisions that have no basis, including immunity for the president. If there had been immunity, Watergate would have had a different outcome. And if we had not had a pardon of Richard Nixon, I also think there might have been a different outcome for Donald Trump, because then we would have shown that you can indict a former president, and he could have been indicted in the interregnum between term one and term two. And I would have liked to have seen that. So what do you think is going to be important in 26? I'm sorry. Yeah, in 20, gosh.
2026. Yeah. It's yeah, crazy.
Tomorrow is 2026. So what do you think? Who's going to be the candidate for president for both parties? That's not till 28. I know that. But
I mean, we have a midterms next year that I'm hoping we will do very well. And I mean, there's a lot of bright spots in the parties and candidates who I feel like are sort of the future of our party. And I'm thinking, for instance, of James Tallarico in Texas is one of my favorites. There's some great people running in Michigan, Mallory McMorrow, friend of the show, or friend of our past show, Justin Benson is running for governor. So there's a lot of great people, I think, who are energetic and doing good stuff right now in the party who deserve a lot of attention. And I hope that as Democrats, you can all turn out and support them this year. It's going to be a year that we all have to do our part and try to save our democracy while we have it.
Absolutely. You know, I still am focused on messaging, and just interviewed Billy Ray I substitute hosted on WCPT, Progressive Talk Radio, for Joan Esposito. And he said, and he's a great messenger. He's a screenwriter, and he, as a screenwriter, messages through his movies, but he has been helping candidates and members of Congress for the last several years. And he thinks that Mark Kelly is a really great candidate for president. What do you think of him, and what do you think about your governor, Gavin Newsom?
Yeah, I mean, Mark Kelly is definitely an exceptional candidate. I think one of the things I'm looking forward to in 2028 is a very healthy and rigorous primary process, something that we didn't have in 2024 that I think, 2024, which I think a lot of people criticize the party of, and I think is very fair. But Governor Newsom has been exceptional this year. He's just really understood the moment that we're in. He's fights back. But I think a lot of the governors are great, you know, Andy Beshear in Kentucky, our own governor, J.B. Pritzker.
He's fabulous.
Fabulous. I mean, there are great governors across the country who I think are showing the way of how to lead and how to fight back right now. And they get the information ecosystem. I've seen Governor Pritzker on a bunch of podcasts, and he's been really renovating his social media presence. And so I think there's a lot of great people, and it's going to be a healthy and really fun 2028 that'll maybe hopefully feel a little bit like 2020, in the sense that there were like 10 different candidates on stage and it got messy, but that's democracy. And I think that's how we get stronger as a party.
I'm looking forward to 2028, but just coming up, I am looking forward to the Illinois primary is in March. And then, of course, we have the November midterm elections. And I can't say how much I think our future depends on the turnout for that. And I feel like everyone is really primed and ready, and that it will be a fabulous turnout, and that we will have a really, really good outcome. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you are in the demographic, but there's been a lot of stories about how the youth male white vote is at risk for Democrats, or has been lost, and how we could win it back. And the statistics are not exactly clear, because there are some statistics that are quoted about that other people are rebutting and saying, well, that isn't really true. But what do you think? Are your generation, white male voters, whining a lot? And are they going to come out to vote? And what would motivate them to?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that Democrats really struggled with in 2024, I think, because there's this old adage in politics where you have to meet voters where they are. And young men have been, at least after the pandemic, I would argue, have been in a very unique position, in the sense that reports of loneliness are higher, senses of alienation are higher. There are fewer and fewer men who are saying that they're dating, that they're going to college. It's just there's a shift among the young male demographic that I think Democrats haven't quite captured. But in my mind, I think a lot of it is just showing up where they are, and they tend to be consumed by things like sports and games and going to parties. And I think it's up to Democrats to show up to those places and communicate with them. And, you know, Governor Shapiro in Pennsylvania has been doing a great job of this. He's been going on all these sports podcasts. And there's this platform called Barstool Sports that a lot of young men in particular listen to. And so I think it's just showing up there, talking in a way that's not overtly political. And I think something that a lot of young men who I talk to really don't like about the Democratic Party is sort of the branding of it. And they get the sense that there are all of these litmus tests that you have to meet in order to be a part of the party. There are all of these sort of standards that you have to, or being politically correct, that you have to sort of meet in order to be a member of the party. And I think it's up to Democrats to communicate with them in that way, that we are a big tent party. We do welcome people of all different backgrounds and viewpoints. And it doesn't matter if you're a man, if you're a woman, or anyone in between. It's if you want a better future, and if you want a livable planet and a livable wage, like, come join our party. And so I think that's going to be the challenge for Democrats, is finding those talented messengers to show up to the places that young men consume information.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because there was just an article about DEI, and that young white males are blaming DEI for them not getting jobs. They're saying women are getting those jobs. They have preferential treatment to make up for all the years of discrimination against women, and that therefore men are unemployed at a higher rate. But there are statistics that counter that and show that there's an increasing number of men getting college degrees. There was a point at which women were outnumbering men. And so it's going to be interesting to watch all of that. But to the point you were just making, going back again to Billy Ray and his messaging, one of the things he says is, don't ever talk about Donald Trump. Nobody cares. Nobody whose vote you want to attract cares. It's built in that he's crazy. It's built in that he is in a mental decline. Nobody cares about that. And his supporters certainly don't care. So don't talk about that. Talk about the policies that will help everybody. That's what Absolutely. We need to be talking about. And I think that's what you're saying too. Let's talk about Yes. what Democrats offer. And I think that that's some of what I know Pritzker is doing. And he's been a great governor. And he also has a great sense of humor, which not everybody has seen, but you will as he's more and more out in public. He is very funny, ad-libbing. I mean, this is not in a teleprompter script, because he responds to something that someone says in ways that couldn't have been planned because you didn't know that the person was going to say that. So I think that'll come across. And, I think we have some really, really Riz candidates. How's that for adopting your language?
Great.
And by the way, everyone listening, I'm not even a baby boomer. I am technically the silent generation. Talk about a misnomer, because I have never been silent. But I technically, it doesn't start until 45 and or 46. 45 is like still baby boomer. And so I'm 45 includes the silent generation. So I am silent generation, folks, having a good conversation with a Gen Z. Okay.
Yeah, there's Gen Z and then millennials, baby, Gen X. And then I think it's baby boomers.
Millennials from 2000. And boy, do you remember the millennial? Do you remember how fearful we were when it was turning to 2000, that all computers were going to crash and that nothing would work? You weren't born yet, were you? When were you born?
I don't think so. 2002.
Yeah, you weren't alive. Never mind. Of course you don't remember it. How could you? When I worked for CPS, they had every September when school was going back, they would publish a list of things that teachers shouldn't say. And I remember reading one that said, never say you sound like a broken record because no student knows what a record is. That was the days of the LP and the 45. And if it cracked, that was the end of it. So anyway, let's just wish everyone a happy, happy new year and a great 26. If you have a favorite candidate, please go to my website, jillwinebanks.com. Or to politicon.com/justthefacts. And let me know who you think the best candidates for president in 28 are. Or tell us what bothered you the most in 25 or that you found comfort in 25 and what you're looking forward to in 26. Would love to hear from our audience. Please engage with us. And I'm so glad, Victor, that we were able to connect at the end of the year. Get back together again after having how many episodes of iGen Politics did we do? A couple hundred, right?
At least 250.
Yeah.
It was so great doing this. And I wish everyone a happy new year, too. Happy new year. And here's to a better 2026.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all for listening.